No, I like this.
We don't have stands.
It's fine.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
the only thing I would have wanted to leave the house to do. So this is great.
Yeah. Lean back. Just half nap, half talk.
Welcome
to Nap Talk, where we talk in a desultory manner in dream fragments.
I like that.
Only waking up to ask if there's snacks.
So, I mean, you're just sing your life, you know?
This is my life. This is my ideal life.
That sounds great.
All right. Now you're sort of moving like a flip book. It's like I'm looking at a flip book animation of you that just slowed down, that sped up, slowed down. Three pages went by at once. Now I've stopped completely. Oh, God. It's technology. The promise of technology has not been realized in certain quarters, even of the first world. Yeah. Slate? No, you're frozen. I don't get it. Okay.
All right. One, two, three. Ted Leo, good morning.
Amy, hello.
Hello, Ted Leo. I'm going to use your full name.
People often do. I don't know. Maybe it's just because of it's like a part of an iambic foot or something, like Ted Leo.
Ted Leo. Yeah. You know,
it's got a nursery rhyme quality to it, like Ted Leo was a thug buddy. Hello, operator.
Ted Leo was a tug boat. I'm down with that. Ted Leo, Ted Leo, Ted Leo.
Maybe it's just more fun in that way than just saying Ted, which I'll be honest, it's not very fun for me to say. Ted.
The one syllable. You like to get away from the one syllable.
I think I do. And it's also, there's something in particular about the way it just goes down, you know, it's like Ted, you know, there's no, it's very like.
But I think that's the problem with any one syllable. Bob.
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 Bob. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, that's true. They all go.
Yeah, it's always like a little jab.
There's like a derisiveness built into it. Mike. Oh, great. Here comes Mike.
Mike. Why do we have that accent? Why are we using that accent for Mike?
I don't know.
I feel like Mike deserves better than that.
It's somewhere between old Boston and an old New York, like toid
kind of accent. Exactly.
And yet, were we to speak of our guest, we would be saying Gene. And there's something different about that. That I don't know. Like you put that emphasis earlier in the first syllable, Gene. And it sounds a little more positive.
Yeah, it's got the uplifting, bright E sound.
Yeah.
Gene. And the soft J.
That's true, J. Yeah,
there's something nicer about that. Because the problem with Mike uses the hard K.
Are you there?
We keep losing connection. Yeah. I don't know if you can hear me or not.
I can. Can you hear me?
I mean, I hear you intermittently. It's like that. I'm hardly ever seeing you.
Yeah.
It's hard to get a flow. Yeah, there's a lot of like, yeah, where it goes.
All right, hang on. I'm going to hang up and call you.
I agree.
I'm going to hang up and call you back.
Okay, I'll pause.
I'm recording.
Dot. Okay. I'm going to do. That's my new term for recording.
Hit the red dot.
Oh, you want to hit the red dot? Okay, should we slate?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Yeah, we're back.
Good morning, Ted. Good morning, Teddy.
Good afternoon from the East Coast.
Good morning, Teddy Nam.
What?
Terrible.
Oh, my God.
Don't include
Was that a good
joke.
Morning Vietnam joke?
Yes, do not include that joke.
You know that one of the broadcasts in camp, they tell soldiers to shave with a cold water because it makes the razor sharper? And in my brain,
really?
When I saw that movie when it came out, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Heat would make it expand, so cold must make
right.
it. Contract. And be a sharper thing. And so for years, I shaved with cold water until one day I woke up and I was
God.
Like, oh, they were just lying because they didn't want them to use all the hot water on base.
Yes, yeah, because it costs money to heat water.
Yeah. Okay. I trusted our government too much. Was that?
You know, when it comes to personal grooming, the government is where I look to for advice. I mean, it makes a little bit of sense, but it also feels like, is it really going to make that much difference?
Right.
Some slightly warm water is going to, you know, the metal is going to expand that much. Also, just say shave with cold water because we can't afford it because that's the order.
Yeah. Just, that's the order.
Just say it. That's right. That's the order. Just do.
My facial hair is the color, consistency, and tenacity of a copper wire brush.
Tenacity.
So it was not fun not using hot water for a number of years.
So it's like a copper-colored Brillo.
Yeah.
It sounds very cozy.
Yeah, you run your fingers through it. Have Band-Aids at the ready.
Rub your soft cheek against Teddy's Brillo face.
So I thought, since our introduction to this episode of Jean Grey got interrupted, maybe we should be interested in taking a second to explain our own process in making this podcast to people, or should we leave that a mystery?
I say, yeah, let's do.
I was just going to say that it's a very DIY thing. We try to get these out, you know, on the Mondays that they're scheduled for. Of late, listeners will notice that that has not been happening. We record these when we can be in the same place, and we do it into a laptop. We don't have a studio, and we do these intros remotely. Yesterday, we couldn't get a good connection. I had all these Pro Tools problems with the episode itself, blah, 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 blah. It's all by way of saying it's hard to predict the workflow for these. We do try to get them out on Monday, and I apologize that the last couple have been late. Hopefully it'll correct itself back soon.
And you're D-ing all the Y. Like, it's a lot of... That doesn't make any sense, but it sounded good.
In the DIY framework, I understand.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, and you're literally doing all of it. Like, I'm there asking questions, but then when it comes time to edit it and put it together and put it up and write the notes, that's all you. So... it's a lot of work for one person.
There was a funny thing that kept me from getting this ready for Monday, which was, without getting too deep in the weeds, for some reason, the recording of this interview with Gene was at a different sample rate than the session itself. So it was playing back slow and pitched down. So there was
that is
a lot
really
of
distracting.
Languorous, you know, kind of, like, yeah, the whole thing was like that. And I had to figure out how to properly get it back to the right speed, which I did. But just so you can hear what it sounded like, check this out.
Just half nap, half talk.
When you say than you did before.
I realize the way that I'm processing things is different now.
We were just really tired.
This episode was about like DJ Screw and we were all on Robitussin.
Robitussin. Yeah.
But no, this episode is with Jean Grey. It's with the great Jean Grey. And so Jean has been using the term polymath for herself lately, which I support because she's the most poly of all the maths.
There's a lot of poly in her. Now, I'm not sure what the math part of polymath is. I understand the poly, and she's definitely poly, but explain the math.
Well, you call somebody a polymath who knows a lot of maths.
Oh, my God.
Who does a lot of different things? I don't know.
Who does a lot of different things?
Now that you mention it. Yeah, I mean, now that you mention it, I don't know why math. They do trigonometry and algebra.
Exactly. Geometry and calculus.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be a poli-sci or a poli-art?
Okay, you know what I'm going to do? I need to know the etymology of this word because it's going to drive me crazy.
I'm going to talk while you're looking it up, okay? A lot of things I didn't know about Jean. I didn't know she started out dancing.
See, there's one poly right there. Polymath is, you know, the root of poly is obviously many or much. The stem of math is mathanine from the Greek.
Mathanine.
From learn.
I don't believe that for
oh
one second.
Oh my God.
You're trying to Good Morning Vietnam me right now.
First of all, I'm gratified that you think I could invent such an impressive definition all on my own and not just read it right off a thing. So many learn. She's a many learner.
She's a many learner. I'm a many learner being in her presence. You know, one of the things that we talked about was just how much Jean takes on, how much she wants to do, how much she wants to create the things that she hasn't yet seen in the world. And we talk about that a little bit in reference to her parents and the way that we sometimes get into the what are your influences, what are your negative influences. And, you know, Jean's parents were kind of famous jazz musicians. Her father was the composer of a song called Mannenberg, which to this day is something of an anthem in the history of South Africa's anti-apartheid struggles.
It's amazing.
And that's a lot to take on, too. I can understand why why Gene was like, I'm going to find my own path, and has made that a polypath.
And what I really appreciate is it takes a certain amount of awareness to realize the ways in which you're not being represented,
yeah,
and how important it is to see yourself represented. And I think, mm-hmm, you know, in the last couple of years as a lady, I've definitely started to realize, like, yeah, I don't see myself reflected in a lot of areas. And she says, and talks about later in the interview, that one of her motivations was that she wanted to do the thing that she wasn't seeing in the world. And that was part of my motivation when I started too. You know, the mm-hmm, there was a certain kind of music I didn't hear, and there weren't a lot of women musicians out there. And I was like, I guess I got to make the music that I want to hear because I'm not hearing it.
I think it's valuable to hear that explicitly stated as a motivation, because I can't speak for everybody, but I imagine for people like me who are white and male, it sometimes can come as a real eye-opener to just hear it so explicitly stated that these things are not seen.
Yeah.
And to have to make the slightest stretching, you know, of yourself out to understand what an effect that can have on someone over the course of not just a lifetime, but the built-up history of centuries of not being represented.
Yeah, and just from my own experience, like, you know, when I would, as a kid, would say, I want to do this or I want to do that, it's exhausting to try to argue with the rebuttal of, you can't do that because it isn't done. And mm-hmm, there's literally no one to point to say, like, well, she does it.
Yeah.
So yeah, hats off to Jean. She's out there doing it.
She's preparing now for a one-woman show that's going on at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater in Manhattan on July 11th, 12th, and 13th. After the episode, we'll give the information for how to get tickets. And obviously, I'll put links to that and all of her music and whatnot. And the scripted series that she's writing and starring in, and that includes puppets, and that I have no doubt she'll probably also be doing some puppeteering.
I don't know what this is, but I am here for it.
Yeah. It's the Empire of Gene. Yeah, we'll put links to all that in the show notes. And here is Jean Grey. The new David Attenborough nature show on Netflix.
Our Planet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is like ASMR for me, because I never get to see the tragic parts of the episodes because it lulls me into such a nap state that I fall asleep.
I did not, because I get very tense about the babies,
yeah,
like that seal pup. Oh, man.
That was rough.
Yeah, I was
real nervous. And then I won't bring up the walrus
because
I had to look away. I thought I could do it.
It's like a no-win situation for the viewer, because seal pup gets away, bear cub doesn't eat.
Yeah.
Bear cub eats, seal pup doesn't get away.
Yeah.
You know, you lose either way.
Oh, God. Well, it was very sad for the bears, and I was excited.
Nature
for the
sucks,
seal.
Is what we've decided.
It's horrible.
Except
it's
for
terrible.
The bowerbird.
And those other birds.
Like
those good
on.
Did you see the episode? I can't remember if it's like a forest one or a jungle one, but it's all the different bird mating dances.
The dude who clears the OCD bird.
Yeah.
Who clears everything. And it's like the moment he saw that one twig, and he was like, what? No, I thought I just did that. And then did that dance. It was so good.
The guy who moonwalks on the branch.
Love that guy on the branch. Yeah, occasionally Ted will send me like little clips from what he's watching. Which brings us to the last clip you sent me.
Oh.
That goddamn caterpillar that
shoots
death goo out of its eyes.
The goo guy.
Ew. Why would you send that to me? Very angry about that.
I love watching things like that, because I'm like, oh, like, we definitely have monsters.
Yeah.
Like, either they're tiny or they're under the sea.
Right.
Like, the things under the sea, which is other space, they're giant monsters down there. But, like, if that caterpillar was, like, 6 feet long, you'd be like, what? What?
I'm horrified at it being an inch long. I do not want that thing. I've had a theory that insects are the physical manifestation of demons.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because it's like a hive mind, I like where this podcast is going.
Yeah.
Hive mind is kind of like demon mind. Uh-huh. We're legion. It's got that, right? Yeah, yeah, I think you could. Like, if you think about it, I could see the look in your eye. You're starting to consider, and you're like, you know what? I'm not necessarily disagreeing.
I would also extend all of this, though, to say that all animals are monsters. If you just abstract yourself a little bit from how familiar we are with dogs, for example.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's furry things with teeth, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, all things are monsters. You know, we say that randomly when we look at our cat and we like, we have a tiny murderer monster in our house.
Yeah.
That just we'd met on the street.
That's weird. Hang out with another species.
Yeah. Regularly.
Just kicking it. Just kicking it.
Yeah, kicking it.
I'm not saying I don't love them. I'm just saying they're monsters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the podcast. No, that doesn't bring us to the podcast.
Does, yeah. But I like
there's
that.
There's no natural segue to...
They're monsters. You know what? You know how it does?
Creative process.
Guess who else are monsters?
Human beings.
Human beings are monsters. And the three of them in this room.
The worst kind.
Yeah.
Artist monsters.
Oh, boy. we're so sorry. We're not, though. And that's kind of what makes us monsters.
Well, Gina, thanks for talking to us. This has been great.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we covered a lot of ground.
I feel good.
So the topic of our podcast is creative process,
mm-hmm.
because I'm really interested in like literally the nuts and bolts of creating. And mm-hmm. I think a lot about the idea of a kind of magic that gets unlocked by practice and work. And that's the stuff that's interesting to me. And I think, you know, for everybody, it usually starts with imitation and influences. Molly Lewis had this great question, which she said that I could steal from her, which is, who would be on your Mount Rushmore of influences? You know, people that maybe you started out wanting to imitate or wanting to incorporate something of their essence into you. And then how did that end up incorporating into what you do
now? That's nice. My first thought was like, oh, right, it would be your parents. And I was like, no,
mm-hmm.
I appreciate what they're doing, but I know that's not what I'm going to do.
Right.
When I'm on stage.
Well, sometimes, not that that's negative, but like sometimes there is in reaction to, mm-hmm. Ted and I were just talking about that doing something in reaction to a thing that's gone before. That often does kickstart, an interesting idea or an approach.
I think definitely both of them influencing me in a way that it wasn't necessarily what I would think about entertaining in front of people. But I think they both had very different ways of creating and processing and writing.
Mm-hmm.
My mom would, you know, wake up in the middle of the night from dreams and have to like scribble it down or do a drawing. Wow. And then be like, that's the name of the album. Or I just got the song in the middle of the day and like have to write it on the back of an envelope or something.
Right.
And my dad was very much sitting down at the piano composing like that. When that was his time, that was his time. And she was more free with things.
Right.
And I think I got both of those things.
I mean, that's really amazing because that sort of like is the two different mm-hmm. approaches, yeah. the lightning bolt versus the, you know, for me, the lightning bolt's not going to happen if I'm not sitting down with an instrument. You can lightning bolt all you want, but, you know, I rarely will remember a dream or I remember I heard a great song in the dream and then it is gone by the time, you know, I can't remember the lightning bolt stuff. I gotta be sitting with an instrument.
It's just there. I realize the way that I'm processing things is different now, and I probably work more like my dad now than I did before.
When you say than you did before,
mm-hmm.
what's the before?
I think mainly concentrating on music things. It's definitely that influence coming from my mom. And I think influence coming from, it's not necessarily a person, but very much sketch comedy and comedians,
mm-hmm.
but where it would turn into like crowd work. And I was very interested because that wasn't necessarily something that my parents did,
yeah.
where it was jazz and it was improv. It wasn't necessarily interactive improv.
Right, yeah. Right.
So I think a lot of the, you know, late night things that I got to watch really influenced that and made it feel like, okay, I gravitate to this more as well. Like, my mom's on stage and she's performing, but she's not, you know, if she's fucking up, she's not talking to the audience about it. And I was like, I would feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
I feel better. That feels more like me.
I've learned a lot from having comedian friends too.
Yeah.
Being around comics a lot.
Yeah, me too. That's interesting to me because something I actually wanted to ask you about in your music also is you're funny and you're a great actor.
This is all true. This is very good.
And you bring a lot of humor into your lyrics. I'm wondering, do you ever embody another character?
I don't think so. I think when it's most vulnerable and most, I'm just, you know, it's more conversational in music. I think that's where I'm definitely being me without reaching for any influence. I'm like, I don't have to think about anything else. This is just me spilling my guts and I'm good with that.
Yeah.
And I think everything else, I've always enjoyed like super ultra violent films and visuals and comic books, but there were never a lot of women in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a big drive. Like when I started seeing movies like La Femme Nikita and I was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. It always, I think, gets read as something that's like, oh, you're being masculine, you're being more aggressive. And I was like, it's not so much as that I just enjoy the murder parts. I'm not thinking of it like that. Sorry. It's just the murder aspect.
Maybe you didn't know that ladies enjoyed murder.
I think we just got the title for this podcast, at least. Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of like really dark. I think my influences are like these, like, not necessarily people, but these worlds of art that I like to draw from.
Yeah.
Be a very abstract Rushmore. Jim Henson.
Uh-huh.
I think definitely growing up with those, it just seemed like really someone I could count on to always remind me that you can go so far with your imagination and it can live in the everyday world. Like, it wasn't just totally removed. It wasn't just a cartoon,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're like, oh, okay, that's one thing, but you can see people interacting and having normal issues. And so that's a big one for me. Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one.
When you first started out, what were the ways in which you practiced? You know, were there like actual music lessons practice or?
My whole first career was as a dancer. So I thought I was going to be a dancer up until I was a teenager. And I think it was kind of the discipline of that.
Mm-hmm.
That I was like, and already being on stage and it being like, you know, it's 7 days. That's just your life.
Yeah.
It's 7 days a week. It's mostly all of the day.
Dance, it's no kidding around.
That's
no.
You went to high school for that? Or you did that in high school?
I did not. I was a vocal major in high school. I had an injury right before I got into high school. And that was kind of the end of my dance career.
Wow.
So I started this whole like have your second life thing very early. So I always think of it like when a college football player gets the injury and they're like, oh, the life I could have had. I'm like, oh, I had that back when I was 13. Man, you just got to move on and get something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it immediately obvious what that other thing was?
No, I don't think it was ever obvious, like the timing in which I wanted to do it until I was in my early 20s.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, you'll do this for this long and then you'll move along and you'll do this and then you grab another life there and here's your plan for that. What was the original question?
About practice.
Yeah.
Oh, practice.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I don't remember it being a yes or no question, but
no, with rap and with performing, absolutely not. I never practiced. I never rehearsed.
Wow.
I didn't care. I watched everyone else do it and I was like, enjoy yourselves.
Wow.
I was like, I don't need to. This is fine. This gets very different, especially in the past couple of years. Uh-huh. I think what I was doing was being like, all of these are, you're never going to lose. You're not going to fail. You're not going to lose the audience. You know how to not lose the audience.
Yeah.
So all of this is always practice for the next one or practice for really, really finding your voice. Because
right.
you can't travel around having the same show. Why?
You don't have to do that. Right. Yeah. What would you do that for?
Right.
Because you're you know, on this underground level, who cares?
Right.
Right.
Who cares? If they're not letting you in that I'm not doing the Grammys, then what am I, why would I do that?
Yeah.
So it was perfecting and practicing it in a really different way, but not in a in the structured way that you
would think. Almost like comedy, you know, where a comedian will try different things on stage, sort of see how it works, and that itself is the practice, and the next night incorporate it or change it a little bit, that itself is the practice.
Yeah. I never did the same show. Like the next, like, if it was on the tour, I would change it up.
Wow.
I never did songs that anyone wanted to hear.
Uh-huh.
I was like, you're going to get what you're going to get. Totally. This is what I'm doing.
You're implying that anybody wants to hear any of my songs.
You have a lot of, you like to play a lot of new songs. You know, songs that aren't recorded yet. Well, you know what? I do too. I just realized I also do that.
Yeah.
You're like, these are my jams and these are the ones that it feels good. And these are the ones that I feel like translate best for me and for you and for everybody here. So
you gotta refresh
that's
yourself.
What we're going to do.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I was kind of doing the structured shows and I was like, that's not what works for you. That's not what works. And the more everyone else around me kept doing structured shows, I was like, mine began to feel more disjointed and
like the show itself became like less structured. Yeah.
The show became, what's the least amount of songs I can do?
Wow.
In like a 2-hour set, I'm like, I'll do like 6 songs.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And then the rest of it, we'll figure it out.
Right.
I think that was it. It was just trying to find really myself. And my interaction and what the room was going to be that night.
I guess it's sort of counterintuitive to how the narrative generally gets handed down about, you know, how one should approach these things, structuring a show, structuring your career or whatever. But, you know, what you said about like, hey, like it's not the Grammys that I'm playing at right now. Like there's something freeing in that that I think can help you actually just become a better artist. Like when you recognize that I'm not headlining Madison Square Garden. So I'm going into any given venue. Maybe there's people there who are already fans and therefore maybe they'll be happy with whatever show I give as long as it's good and presented
That's so lovely of you. That, and mine is so much more like, you're going to be happy with what I'm giving you.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing.
That was the flip
you're
side.
You're going to shut up and eat the meal I prepare.
Because the other part of the equation is that, or there are people here who have no idea who I am, and therefore there's no expectation.
Well,
and
that I feel comfortable with that. Like if I'm opening for somebody at like a festival and people are throwing frisbees and they're not paying attention, I'm like, fine, I will be your background music. I don't care.
Right.
But there are definitely shows where I have to fight against the domino effect of I make one mistake, the one mistake leads to a panic. That leads to the second mistake.
That's definitely happened.
And then it's like, the word is going to get out that I'm terrible and my career is going to be over. Like suddenly it just seems like that one mistake means that the career is over. I have to fight against that.
That's a lot.
I know. It's exhausting.
That's a lot to go up there now. I think my only panic on stage ever was, because it was a lot of words. I'm also so happy that I don't do that anymore. It's so many words.
It's a lot of words.
So many. I was like, Gene, why?
A lot of words.
Why would you put so many words?
Too many notes.
There's a lot of rap music.
I mean,
less words.
I get accused of having a lot of words. I probably have a third of the words that you have in any given song.
A lot of words.
I think when it was that practice and the repetition, I think I was always most comfortable where I'm like, I could do this backwards, forwards, it doesn't matter what happens now.
Right.
As long as that happens, as long as I'm comfortable there, then anything kind of rides around it. Writing practice, I just write very fast. I write music and sometimes other things very fast. And I never wrote anything that I didn't have to record. Like I was never one to be like, no, just sit down and see how we're writing a song. Mm-hmm. I would usually wait to get to the studio.
Yeah.
And be in there and be like, just put it on. All right, I'm good, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turned out that that's what worked for me. Writing under pressure was always a thing. And it was great for that. And in this new life, it's terrible.
Oh, wow. What's the shift there?
So for the past, year, I've been very happy that I'm like, you know, finally making a transition to be like, I just write my own projects and whatever's coming out, which is writing for TV and working on this this one woman show at the Public Theater.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, good night.
Yeah.
Man.
I want to know about that because I'm always curious about pressure, deadlines, limitations, and outside motivation as being a help or a hindrance, and motivations to like, I want to impress somebody, I don't want to embarrass myself, or I, you know, I'll show them is one of our favorite outside motivations.
Yeah.
But, you know, and also, you know, just deadlines within that. Is there a deadline for this?
Like, yes.
Describe the deadlines and pressures that you are feeling and how they are helping or hindering.
So when it began, I was like, I've got 16 months to do this. Man, that's a lot of time.
Sure. Just take the first 15 months off.
Exactly. Yeah. And I didn't. And I didn't. I started maybe like 10 months in.
It's because
I think my mind just needed a second to like wrap around the idea that it was happening. Being like, okay, so you knew this was happening. This is what you planned for. You planned for it at this time in your life. You planned for it where it is. Okay, but what is it really? Like, that's all good and fine.
Yeah.
And then I'm someone who works backwards from the future. So like, I already have the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, now you got to make it.
Right.
Now you got to do it. And now you have to include all of the things in your mind that are in there. So yes, you do. Because there are other people involved also. And because you're not just working with yourself. It's not an independent project.
Yeah.
There are people involved who are like, and we'll be workshopping it now and
so
come in.
Are you working
and,
with a writer? Like,
no.
Like writer, director?
It's just me. They normally do these shows with the collaborators working together.
Yeah.
And the first time they called me in, I was like, I didn't want to do it.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I don't need anybody. Okay. And then they called back and they were like, we want you to do it.
Yeah.
You can do it by yourself and bring on whoever you want. I was like, okay, then I'll do it. It's a lot.
Visual stuff?
There's... So
I don't want to spoil the show.
No, this is fine.
For our listeners, but...
I'm just going to lay down a little
bit. Yeah, please. So I'm
writing it. Uh-huh. I'm also composing all the music for it. And then there's, you know, I'm also playing keyboard on stage, which I haven't done in about 25 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I'm also dancing in it, which I haven't done...
Oh, my God.
Since... 13, 14.
So you're choreographing the dance.
Yeah.
You're composing, you're writing the book.
And we're doing visuals as well.
And no collaborators. Nope.
I have my friend Ophelia Tribune, who's a choreographer, is coming in on that. And then my other friend Paul Wilson, but I'm, So nobody asked for any of these things. Like no one said these are the things that have to go into this.
Right.
And I think for me, in starting to write like what it was and going through this process that I'd never gone through before, I put all these things in there. And I'm like, well, if you're going to do it, then fucking do it.
Yeah.
Do it for real. Like, actually challenge yourself this time. You could get up there and you could write a bunch of essays and you could memorize them and then read them out. And that's not enough. You have to rehearse. You have to do all of these things now.
Yeah.
You haven't had to do that. Why don't you... do it? Why don't you really, really challenge yourself?
And do you have, you know, so it's clear there's a lot of pressure that's being applied from the front and the back.
They're fine. Every time I meet with them, they're like, there's
but
an actual
more
deadline.
Pressure for people to go like, oh, we have complete faith. And you're like, no, you're putting your faith in the wrong person.
Every time I'm like, like, it's just so great. Okay, we'll see you next time. I'm like, oh my God.
Like, please yell at me a little
bit.
Why
won't you stop me? But yeah, they have a lot of trust. In giving myself deadlines, I've also learned, I think probably after my mid-30s, that deadlines and schedules became important for me.
And do you have internal deadlines for yourself that you set, like a schedule of practice, and like, I want this done by that time?
Yeah.
Oh, well. And that's really what you have, like a... I've like actually been saying to myself, like, do I need to buy a whiteboard to like write down my tasks and like for different projects?
I love lists. It works. It works. Yeah. It works for me.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily work for every project. I think every project is different. I tried it specifically for this public theater thing, mm-hmm. and that doesn't work for me.
Mm.
What works for that is like computer and sectioning things out, mm-hmm. and then going back and rereading. Self-editing is what I'm really, really learning how to do, and it wasn't something that was necessary in writing or composing music before,
yeah.
because it was kind of like, just let it all out there.
Yeah.
So I'm writing script episodes for this show, and I'm writing this show, and I'm learning how to write and read it again and pull back and pull back.
And be obsessed. Be succinct. Try to switch into that objective mode and edit yourself. Yeah, that we were just discussing that too.
Yeah.
That's really important. I think that's one of the things that, in my opinion, really sets artists apart from people who want to be artists but aren't, because anybody can sort of generate something.
Yeah.
But to step aside and listen to it or look at it as if you haven't written it, and then to go into another mode, which mm-hmm. is now how do I fix it? Those are different skill sets. But, you know, it's like it's the self-awareness objectivity skill set that is so, I think it's hard for most people to be objective about themselves in any way, but definitely not about art. I think most people like make a thing and they go, look what I made. And then that's the, you know, they don't, they want that to be the end of it. They want just the applause to start.
So you feel that that's a new chapter for you, this like self-editing?
It is very much. And I thought it would shape very differently.
Right.
I thought I would be able to shape it very differently without a lot of self-editing.
Right.
So
right,
I'm like,
right.
I already know how to do this. And I'm like, bitch, maybe you don't. Wow. Maybe you need to take a second and figure it out. It's different.
Yeah. Do you think that in your musical career, is that something that has just come naturally to you? Because
Because
I would say, As a fan, speaking as a fan of your music,
thank you so much.
Some of your stuff goes stratospheric places. Some of it's really tight and like well edited, and you know, et cetera.
I think it's the idea of you know, learning, knowing so well how to operate inside of that box.
Yeah,
and even if it's, especially if it's sticking to, like, any time you get called in to like do a guest appearance, you're like, it's never going to be longer than 16 bars. It's going to be 16, or it's going to be an 8 hook, or it's going to be something. When it was my thing, I was like, I can play around with it.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, that's the thing.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then being able to be like, I have to be as succinct as possible because I don't have the luxury that many other people have. This song's not going to necessarily have a video.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I got to get all this shit.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And jam-packed in here, not so it feels clustered, so you feel comfortable.
Right. And now...
all new boxes.
Yeah,
are there things boxes, that you're discovering that you thought you... that would be difficult for you, or that you weren't good at, that you're surprised that you can do?
Hmm. Oh, that's nice. I think I'm... and this is script writing wise, because that's a totally whole of different thing. So I'm kind of flipping my brains between all of these worlds. No, I think what I'm most excited about doing is, I think, the ability to be like, that was trash.
To
get
be able
it
to,
out of there.
As they say, kill your darlings.
Yeah.
Like, you know, edit stuff away that isn't working, and then have faith that you're going to come up with something better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think with music, I got to a point where I was like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't care. Put it out.
Yeah.
Whatever. and this requires a great deal more care, because it's the first time I'll be able to use this voice in this way. It's the first time these kinds of things will be seen. And I'm like, don't fuck it up.
Right.
You cannot fuck this up. So if it's not amazing, throw it in the trash.
Right. Are you having periods where you experience writer's block? And if so, do you have techniques to get over that?
I have no techniques.
No techniques.
I don't know what's writer's block and what's like, I don't know. And I'm like, maybe it's not like that. Maybe there's no writer's block. Like, maybe it's fucking there when you sit down and you make yourself do it, or it's not.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or you get a thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I try my best to not think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've found that I've gotten a lot of things done around the house.
Uh-huh.
That's what you got to do. You got to put your brain in a different space sometimes.
It's very, very little amounts of writing.
Like going for a walk or riding your bike or something. I mean, it seems like a lot of people have a strategy. I'm not really a strategy, but like when they go for a walk and do a different thing, answers come to them about, you know, how to solve the problem.
I wish that would work for me.
Yeah.
I live with a walker.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I just need to go take a walk. I'm like, I'm so jealous of that.
Yeah, walking around.
Yeah. And then things happen.
I like to take walks, but they don't help me. It's more of a, like, what I need to do is focus, you know, like I need to sit down and just, I actually need to force myself to start doing. And then usually I think
that's where I am. I'm like, yep, well. Yeah. I guess it's writing time. Yeah. Here's my writing tea.
Yeah.
And I got my little plate of writing snacks.
Writing snacks.
I'm like, sure, that'll work. And usually it works when I know I'm under pressure.
Yeah.
Or at a random time where I'm like, this wasn't even supposed to work now. And then once I feel like it's the same thing that like working out. And once you get in the routine, you're there, you're like, why haven't I been doing this?
Yeah.
This is fun. Yeah. I enjoy this.
Yeah,
look how much
so
I'm
hard.
Getting done. It's a routine regimen.
So with this show, you're at the helm.
Yeah.
With the 2018 album, Everything's Fine,
mm-hmm.
that you did with Quelle, Chris. Mm-hmm. What was the collaboration level, trading back and forth, push-pulling each other?
We both definitely work in very different ways.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, he's a I need to have this music on, and then I need to go walk around,
right.
And then it forms over the course of like hours and days, and he's like, I'm still into that thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to go smoke 82 cigarettes. And I'm more of like, I got 20 minutes, I'll sit down and write this verse. I think the more of the collaboration was being able to give each other space
mm-hmm.
and understand how we both work.
Yeah.
And it was not going to be a situation where we're sitting in a room and we're like, all right, hat, you go. And he's like, cat. Yeah. And I'm like, what? Never would have gotten that.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think that was our thing. I think sonically, we like to sit down and listen to arrangements, listen to sequencing, and we traded a lot back and forth on mixes. Like mm-hmm. your ears are going to hear something different than I would.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, there needs to be a snare in there. Why is there not a snare? Or that's muddy, or this is happening, or you know.
Yeah.
I think it was really fun to have someone whose end goal is the same, but we both hear things very differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's important, that different ears on a mix
mm-hmm.
idea.
Oh, yeah.
Doing
that record with Ted, there would be a general impression that I'm generally kind of bad at knowing specifically what's wrong with a mix when I don't like it. All I can do is like like it, which is not very helpful. But you're really good at saying, you know, it's because we got, you know, the guitars are together, we should split them, you know, in stereo, take down the snare, or what, like you would have specific ideas about what had to happen.
No, it's always nice to have someone who you can bounce things off of and be able to trust their ears as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And be open to trusting someone else's ears.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And be like, I know we both like different kinds of music, and I like things that are way more clean, and mm-hmm. he likes things that are mm-hmm. way more lo-fi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, so we have to meet in some kind of compromise, right. Sonic compromise.
I have a lot of comments on that with that album that I will save for not the podcast.
Yes.
When the production.
Let's talk about
each
it.
Other. Yeah.
But maybe one thing that is worth talking about regards that album is to that end about different production ideas
mm-hmm.
and whatnot. It comes together in your collaboration in what was to me, and I mean this in a good way. Whenever anybody says that,
oh no, you
know, you feel like you're entering dangerous territory. But it was a surprisingly and like refreshingly solid hip hop record.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, as opposed to like some wild adventure into.
I agree, and I think because we're both people who get very angry when people try to classify it as like alternative. I'm like, what? What the fuck is alternative about it? And I think to both of us, all of that is hip hop.
Right.
Like even we come from very different background. Before he left yesterday, he's in Oakland. Today he's going to do a show. But he came out and he was like, oh, I'm just practicing my thiz. And I was like, I don't know what you're saying. He was like, the Thizz, the Oakland dance. I was like, you know, that's very sweet. Sometimes I think you forget that I am from New York. And none of that was on our radar as we had an unholy allegiance to the East Coast. Yes. So I don't know what you're talking about. But a lot of those things, like just that feel, that sound, a totally different idea mm-hmm. of what it is, being able to appreciate both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
It's really, it was an interesting time. I don't like collaborations. I'm a lone wolf.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good at it.
Mm-hmm. What don't you like about it?
Yeah, I don't like taking the time to like explain things uh-huh. instead of like just doing it and getting yeah. it done. Yeah. And I'm yeah. like, all right, yeah. I guess we got to sit and talk about this now. Cool. I mean, it could be done by that time.
Yeah.
I have uh-huh. 100% understand that.
How dare you?
When you have the ability to iterate what you want to iterate, it's one thing if you're entering into a collaborative project.
Yes.
Yeah.
But if you're working on something and you know you can just crank it out, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm finding, because I'm working on a collaborative project and it's with like three other people.
Oh gosh,
it's
how?
It's a musical, so there's, you know, there's always like a bunch of people involved. And for a while it was really like, I just really think you guys should do, like, what is, you don't, why are, and feeling like, I don't know. Are you even listen? Do you even like musicals? Like, and you know, but and kind of like not really understanding where everybody's coming from, mm-hmm. and then spending time with them, and suddenly realizing that there is a point where we all intersect, mm-hmm. and you just have to find that point, and it's really kind of exciting when you do. It's definitely not the point you start out with. I mean, right. you know, obviously, like. I could take it and say, this is what we're doing. Like, you guys bring your skill set to my idea. But it's interesting and it's really exciting. It's like an exciting, magical human thing mm-hmm. that happens when humans coordinate and conspire. And there's one other word that I'm... collaborate, wait a minute. Cooperate.
Yeah. I mean, I have not collaborated deeply on that level, probably with anybody but you, Amy, and... I think that was a really fun and exciting thing to find that spot. Like when yeah. I got over mm-hmm. my own preciousness about what I was bringing to the table and realized that we're working on a puzzle together and we can
yeah.
make it the best thing that we can be, getting to that spot, it's a different thing.
It's a different thing.
It's a very different
It's a hybrid thing.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. a, you know, like where, you know, Amy Mann mixed with Ted Leo, what animal is that? Is it a liger?
Is it a tiglon?
It's a tiglon.
Yeah, so it's not like a compromise. It's creating a new creature.
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, musically, definitely, I'm open to doing it. I think writing wise and like on stage wise and any of that, I can't do it yet because I haven't been able to present my own voice just by itself.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and I think that's right. a really important thing that's for me to be like. You need to know me first.
Yep,
and then there are people I would love to do things with, but I don't want anyone to think at any point. And be like, oh, that's really nice. And but what'd she do, the soundtrack? Right. I'm like, exactly. bitch, I'm, no. Exactly. I wrote this whole thing.
I think especially yeah. for women.
To, yes.
You know, so you Very yourself much. Can feel like, no, this is who I am. This is what I can do. I have the skill set. I'm good at it. It needs to be established and you need to accept it before mm-hmm. I start doing this thing where somebody's going to ask me if my boyfriend wrote that.
Yeah. yeah. And then we can branch out and yeah. then we can do other things. This the show that I'm writing, not the public theater show, actually... The people I was working with, they were like, you know, we want to bring in someone else. I was like, okay. I feel like I was writing this whole thing. And we had meetings and I was like, I love her. I want to work with her in the future. This is not a co-writing situation.
Right.
So either I'm writing this or we're not doing it.
Right.
And I think it's also because I'm a woman, because I don't have experience in this field. And I'm like, I just need you guys to trust me.
Yeah.
And hear this whole voice yeah. and then we'll bring her back on another thing.
Yeah. I love how gently yet terrifyingly firm you build this wall and,
yeah.
and say, no, we're not climbing over that wall right now.
No.
Yeah.
We're just not going to do that. And that's nice.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you doing that. And I appreciate you, in air quotes, wanting to lighten my load.
Right.
I enjoy carrying heavy loads. This is like kung fu training for me, carrying buckets of water up the mountain.
Right.
Let me do it.
To lighten your load.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good with the load.
Let me lighten your load by doing it for you.
By doing it for you. I see you need some help there. I'm like, I haven't even done it yet. How do you know I need help?
Yeah. When somebody says, I see you need some help there, let me help you, what they're saying is, you're doing it wrong.
Right.
And we all know that.
Oh, no. I was like, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I also realized that I have no poker face.
Yeah.
Or voice. Because I realized that they were like, is everything okay? I was like, oh, yeah, everything's great.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh, never better.
Yeah, so the whole past year has been just a bunch of new processes.
It seems like a real birth of a lot of things, like a lot of turning points, and
it's great,
very exciting. When is the public show?
It's July 11th through 13th.
Get out.
Okay, I'll go.
I think that's fantastic.
I've got as many months to edit this one episode of the podcast as Gene has to finish the show.
And within that, my second draft of scripts for this show, well, it was supposed to be Monday, but it's Thursday now, so I'm very excited about that. So I have like two things that are incredibly different things that I'm very excited about.
Are you finding that they inform each other or help each other in any way?
In the self edit portion and one is one thing where I'm like, I have to get all of these things in this 12-minute space.
Right.
And then keep a cohesive storyline going across, 6 episodes in 12 minutes, get all this information in.
Wow.
I'm also not just writing for me, I'm writing for other people, and then I'm writing for puppets, and then I'm writing songs.
Right.
And that's amazing. So it's that's like a whole thing I can't even imagine being able to do.
It's good. I think it's the thing that I feel best about. It's the thing that I've most been waiting for in my life. So for it to be real, and at least once a week, I sit down and I'm like, that's my life. That's what I'm doing. I'm getting paid to write crazy shit for puppets. That's what I'm doing right now.
I love it.
That's inspiring because, well, for any number of reasons, but as we sort of drift toward the, like, can't we just do variety shows and can't that just be what we do?
You know, I would love that so much.
Yeah, kind of like, with these projects, it seems like you have been able to pull together that constellation of different things that you're good at, but that don't always land in the same space, or that it's very hard to find an ongoing path forward and uniting. You know, you're a musician here, or you're trying to do some acting here, or you're trying to do some different kind of writing here, and to be able to pull those together into something that may actually be a forward going path.
Those are all my very long master plans.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I was like, I'll do all these things. I was like, you'll see. You'll see. It's all the same thing. Trust me. It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
I would love nothing more in all of these processes and in every way that I want to do all of these things to stop doing all of this immediately, move somewhere that's on the beach and open a small restaurant and just do that for the rest of my life. But I will never stop feeling like I have a responsibility to create the things that are still unseen.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, really bothers me that I'm like, why doesn't this exist? Why isn't this happening?
100%
and
get it.
So I can't stop.
Yeah.
And I'm like, either someone's not going to do it as well or nobody's going to do it.
Yeah.
And I need that kid to look up and be able to see the way I was able to see like Jim Henson and be like, oh, open my imagination door, or these things are available to us, or we can live in these spaces. And it's a lot. So I would like to stop. I'm very tired, but I can't.
I really understand this. I also often feel this. It's a real pressure.
Yeah.
And I find that, you know, I've been writing an enormous amount, like faster than I've ever been. And it is a kind of like weird pressure. Like, I don't really understand where it comes from, but your description sort of
it feels like that
close.
All the
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
All the time. And more so that I'm seeing things that are getting there. And I'm like, it's not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. We gotta push it. And then even I think a lot of my process is being able to understand what's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the worst part of that process is sitting in rooms with people explaining what's missing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's small things. And I'm like, I just want to see, I've never seen anyone who looks like me fishing on television.
Yeah.
It sounds like a very small thing.
No, it's huge.
It's just one thing. Yeah. Just in quiet space with no music behind it and no quick editing and a wide shot. Just fishing. What the fuck? Just
God,
that.
That's so weirdly profound, though. Yeah. Like, and it's a small thing, but it's huge because its absence says a lot.
Yes.
And it's important.
It's so important.
I need to see people who look like you fishing.
Yeah.
I need to know that there's one person that isn't like all the other people fishing. I need to know that there's variations on themes.
And I'm like, it sounds like a weird example, but I'm like, I can't think of one time.
I get it. Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's such a simple thing to do. Why wouldn't that be there?
Right,
wow.
Right.
So in doing all these things and in writing all these things, there's much more responsibility in this process.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times when I'm writing these scripts, the first pass is just to make sure I'm covering all the responsibility, and then I can go back and be loose.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's such a shitty thing to have to write like that. There's so many people who don't have to think about that when they do it. I was like, but I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest part of things that I think I didn't know I could do that well. Like if I'm reading something and I can like visualize it and storyboard it and it makes me cry because it hasn't existed, I'm like, yes.
That's a good metric. I think so much of being an artist is about giving a shit about things, you know, caring about things and, you know, what are the things you really care about? Because other people will feel it in your work and they will feel, here is a person who cares. And that's a valuable thing. That's a valuable energy just to radiate throughout the world.
Yeah. And I want it to be like, you know, not everyone who cares has to, you don't have to see me and be like, it's expected that she cares.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I know you might not, but it makes it fun.
Yeah.
This is such a good conversation for me to be having.
Oh, good.
Good.
Right now.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Because it's just reminding me of things that I have to do or ways to do it, you know.
Well, I was going to say it's as good a reason as any, but it maybe is one of the best reasons for making anything is to see the thing in the world that you are not seeing that you want to see.
That was a big motivation for me getting involved in music, starting a band, because I wanted to be a fan of something, but I was like, well, there isn't anyone really doing it. Certainly, like, not a lot of women. And not that I would, like, had to, you know, I mean, as women, we get used to making do with male, you know, going like, I want to be like David Bowie because that's all we had. But if there was a female David Bowie, like, might have changed my life, you know?
We needed it. Yeah. You helped me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
It's, you have to be able to, if you can. And I think, a lot of the message is being like, hey, don't think that you can't, that you have to like, that you're waiting for someone else to do it or someone else who's like, well, you're like, well, I don't know. I'm not talented. I'm like, well, you're talented in some fucking way.
Yeah.
So let's find out what it is.
Yeah.
And let's do the thing that hasn't been
seen. And once
seen.
Again, caring is the most important part. If you care and you have an idea, then, you know, then practice and learning and, you know, rehearsal can get you pretty far. And the art will come.
I feel like I've never stressed that. I've never been like, oh, where is it? Where is it gone? And I'm trying at this point, because I have these kind of deadlines with other people, to pull it out earlier. Sometimes at this point, I have to explain that I just can't. That's, I don't know. The magic show doesn't happen until the fucking magic show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe that's the title of the episode. Yeah. I want to ask one nuts and bolts question, putting together the one woman show. Mm-hmm. So now you're a few months out. What is the actual schedule leading up to that look like? What's actually on your calendar in terms of, you know, wrangling it down?
It's a lot of dance rehearsal, because mm-hmm. there's one like very big number that's like a 10 minute long. Again, no one asked for this.
Now that I'm insisting on it.
and everything covers like different genres and different styles of dance. So we go through ballet, tap, modern. There's a great like chorus line fosse thing. It's just dumb. It's really dumb and wonderful. So there's a lot of dance rehearsals, and that's one thing, like rehearsing with other dancers. But then there's also the dance rehearsals where it's just me in a room remembering my body.
Yeah.
And muscle memory has been crazy. And then also being like, all right, well, that doesn't happen anymore.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's you know, it's discovering it all again. And then there's a lot of piano for me. Mm-hmm. Which is very interesting, and not necessarily for the practice of just being comfortable, because I'm doing other cover of one thing, then the rest of it is my stuff, and then I'm doing an interpretation of my dad's composition.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Which is a crazy thing, because a lot of the reason that I don't play live is like, your dad is who your dad is, and this is, you can't just get up there and fuck around. A lot of that. And I haven't even gotten to memorizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's probably what all of June is going to be. Just me walking around
muttering
repeating,
to yourself.
Repeating and repeating and repeating. Yeah. And I think if I had, I didn't have the time to do it before this, but I think I'm trying to understand how to work with my pressure and just give myself a little more time,
because
it's not a night before situation. It's a lot. It's intense. I think it's more intense emotionally than anything, because I decided to open the door on all of these past things.
It sounds like a lot of doors open and a lot of stuff, you know, brought out that hasn't been brought out for a while.
I'm
absolutely fascinated, and I hope that there's a way I can be around to see it.
I really hope so. If you guys have shows, you got to cancel the show.
I don't.
I think I have shows, but I'm not sure when they, like, I may intersect, but okay. I'm not sure.
I will be here.
Please come see it.
Yeah.
I hope I do none of the things that I said are in the show.
Yeah.
It's just me crying on stage for an hour.
What happened to the piano?
God, there's no piano, and like, what happened to the Fosse part?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks, you guys.
This has been really wonderful.
Big fans of all of your processes and your work and your stage performance and your writing and your understanding of art. So I always appreciate it.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you. Samesies.
Yeah, we'll have to do a follow-up episode too, because when all of these Herculean things are a little bit in the past. I want to talk a little bit more about hip hop and stuff at some point. So
okay.
We'll do that again. We'll do that another time.
Amen.
All right. Jean Grey, thank you
so much.
Woo!
It's been fabulous.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been The Art of Process. I'm Ted Leo.
And I'm Amy Mann.
Please remember to like and subscribe.
And what else please remember to do? I don't know. Like and write a review. Write a positive review. Don't write a negative review.
Write a review. Tell your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. If you like to learn about creative things and how creative people work and how it can help you be more creative, then
we hope this checks a few of those boxes for you. If you are at all able, get thyself to New York on either July 11th, 12th, or 13th of the year 2019 to see Gene's show. It's called Genius with a J. It's at Joe's Pub at the Public Theater. The Art of Process, by the way, loves and endorses the Public Theater and Joe's Pub within it. That's it for this episode. We'll see you next time.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Just half nap, half talk.
When you say than you did before.
I realize the way that I'm processing things is different now.